Well, I'm really excited to be here with you this morning, and I want to kind of bring you a message that comes out of what we've been doing in the kids' Sunday school recently. So for some of the younger ones, this is going to sound a little bit familiar. In fact, it's also related to something that I shared two Sundays ago at the Cedar Creek Chill event, which we hosted here at the church, which we had about 40 middle and high schoolers come. And that was a lot of fun. I did say to Mike, I said, it's very, very strange. I didn't plan it this way, but I am bringing a message that is a subject that we've just been doing. So I've already been studying it, and I've already been in it. And here it is, Groundhog Day, and I'm doing it again. And on top of that, the subject for this morning is learning from our past experiences. More specifically, how we get from where we are, from where we've been, to where we want to be. We're going to discover that the experience that we have in the past, it plays a part in getting us from where we are today to where we want to be in the future. But it's not just the experience that matters. I have two examples of heading into an experience thinking, I got this, and being drastically wrong. I'm really glad I didn't add a third one this morning when I left the mic on. I thought, oh boy, that's a lesson for you right there, is just assume everyone can hear everything you say at all times, and you'll never have any trouble. But a very good friend of mine, his name is Jai. He tells this story of a time when he was very, very early into ministry. And he was working with students the same way I do, and he had been out late. In fact, he had been up nearly all night with some of these students. And it was Sunday morning, and he had only slept about an hour. And the thing about the church he was at, it was one of those older churches where the pastor and all the elders and the choir director and all them, and maybe even the whole choir, they sat on chairs that were kind of up back here, if you've ever seen that, where they're kind of, the stage is really deep and they sit so everyone can see you the whole time. And they're passing out communion. And they've passed the trays and they're holding the bread and they're holding the cup, and he's sitting in his seat. And the gentleman comes up to share the devotion for communion. And I know that when we have our people come and share for communion, they're always very concise and very brief and exactly to the point, right? You've never heard somebody go on and on and on and circle the landing strip until they run out of fuel and crash the plane. But that day, there was one such man. And my friend, he's sitting there holding the bread and holding the cup, and he's sitting here, and this guy's just going on and on and on, and he starts to nod off. Next thing you know, he's dropped the cup and the bread on the floor in front of everyone. Thankfully, and he says, thankfully, the carpet was red. Same as we have here. If you ever drop the cup during communion, don't worry, we'll get you another one. Carpet's red, no one will be able to tell. He thought he had it. He thought he could handle it. He could not handle it. I have a very similar situation as far as getting into what I thought I could handle. Our church league basketball team missed a week of games because of the snow a couple of weeks ago. And so last Tuesday, they scheduled us for two games back to back. And when we heard about this, we thought, well, that's going to be unpleasant. That's 2 hours of running around. We're tired at the end of one game. But that's okay. We got this. We did not got this. By about halfway through the second game, everyone's tired. Everyone's grumpy. Everyone hurts. And we're just, can we just be done? We did not win that game. Although we probably wouldn't have anyway. It's not that year. That's okay. But we got in and we thought, we can do this. And we got back out and we thought, nope, that didn't go the way we wanted to. And the next morning was worse. And I'm laying in bed thinking, can we never, ever do this again? How did I get myself in this situation? What was I thinking? We all have decisions like that. I think we look back in our lives and maybe something we thought very casually, I can handle this. And we get in there and we realize I could not handle that. I was not prepared. I did not have the strength. I did not have the sleep or the patience. And there are moments that we look back on with regret. Unfortunately, I think many of us, we continue to find ourselves in a place where we keep making those same mistakes. The mistakes that we swore we would never make, you know, the soreness wears off, the memory fades, and we leap back into the same situations. One of my favorite examples of not learning from experience comes from a series of videos. I'm a big YouTube fan. I don't watch a lot of television. I don't know how you are, but I like to watch interviews. If there's a movie that I've seen or something that is very that I'm enjoying, I like to see the people behind the scenes and that sort of thing. So whenever there's a movie come out, the actors who are in the movie, they do promotion. They go around, they go on different talk shows, and they give interviews. And one of my favorite ones is the guy who was cast to play Spider-Man, Tom Holland. He's a young guy. He's still a teenager when he was first cast, although it's been a few years. And he's going around giving these interviews on this brand new movie. And this guy cannot keep a secret to save his life. Every time he gives an interview, he's accidentally spoiling something that hasn't been announced yet. He's on social media, and he's live on social media and in his hotel room. And he's opening up. He's like, hey, everyone who follows me, I just wanted to share this thing. I just got this envelope. It's a letter. I'm going to open it and I'll read it to you. And so he opens it up and he pulls it out of the envelope and he starts reading. And it's from Mark Ruffalo, who's another actor and who has been cast to be his character, is now in the same movie. It's one of the Avengers movies with him, but this hasn't been announced yet that character is going to be in the movie. So he's opening it up and he's reading the letter saying, hey, just wanted to send you this. I'm so excited to be working with you. On the back of the letter, there is printed, like you would see on like a tax form, in giant block letters, confidential, do not release. And he just pulls it out of the envelope and is reading it off. And the rest of us can see. He reads the whole thing. He turns it over to see if there's a back. And he sees what everyone else. And his eyes get wide and he swears and he turns the camera off. And it's gotten so bad that now in the press for the more recent Avengers movies, Marvel doesn't let him do interviews on his own anymore. He has to have an interview babysitter. They have to send a second actor. There are these compilations on YouTube of him doing interviews, and he's sitting next to another member of the cast, and they're just waiting for him to say something dumb. And they're waiting for him. And as soon as they feel like he's going to spoil something, they'll start like yelling, or they're like, he'll be sitting next to Benedict Cumberbatch, who someone will ask Tom a leading question. Hey, so what really happens in this movie? And he's like, I'll answer that question for you. He puts his hand over his mouth. But one of the actors that he's frequently paired with is Robert Downey Jr., who plays Iron Man in the Avengers movies. And there is an example of someone who has learned from a multitude of mistakes. And many of you are old enough to remember that you know, when he was a child, as he grew up as an actor, he made a lot of mistakes. He made a lot of very poor choices. He was constantly in trouble. He was an alcoholic. He was a drug addict. His addictions got him in so much trouble. He lost a lot of jobs. At one point, he spent a year in a court-ordered rehab facility. It didn't seem like he was going to be able to get himself out of trouble. But one day, probably not all on one day, but there was a time in his life where he made a series of decisions to learn from his mistakes, to change for the better. And now he's one of the highest paid actors in the world. His success is passed around as one of the great redemption stories. But he wouldn't be where he is today if he hadn't gotten his act together and learned from his mistakes. So what is the difference between someone who has a negative experience, someone who has that experience of making a mistake and learns from it, and someone who doesn't. Okay? The answer is wisdom. I'm going to try to define wisdom today as learning from those past mistakes. Okay? Because we try to think, I have a lot of experience. I've experienced a lot in life. Things have happened to me. And we mistake experience for wisdom. Okay, but experience by itself is a terrible teacher. It's the first slide. Experience by itself is a terrible teacher. Okay? Experience only makes you better if you add wisdom to the equation. Okay? Experience only makes you better if you add wisdom to the equation. Having an experience does not necessarily make you wiser. Okay? So how do we do that? What does that look like? How do you develop the wisdom needed to make the most of your experience? It's a great question. I'm glad you asked. There's actually a whole book of the Bible that is dedicated to helping us develop wisdom. Right? It's the book of Proverbs. And it's a collection of principles, of advice, of wise sayings that is designed to help us learn how to live well. And I want to direct your attention to one verse out of Proverbs 26. It says, "As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly." I'm going to say it again because it's gross. As a dog returns to its vomit, so fools repeat their folly. If you've ever had a dog, you understand what this says. Okay? The author of this proverb is telling us that making the same mistake over and over again without learning from it is the equivalent of a dog vomiting and then going back to eat it. Okay? We almost put on the sign out in the front yard this morning, "Don't eat your own vomit." We didn't think that would help bring people in, so we didn't do that. Here's what's crazy, though. There are so many of us who we find ourselves in this position. We have friends and family that we find in this position who keep making the same mistake over and over again, and we never learn from it. It seems crazy. When we think about it objectively, when we're not in the moment, we think, how could I keep doing this? How could I keep making this mistake? Well, there are some very good reasons why we keep making those mistakes. Okay? And incidentally, they're the same reasons that a dog returns to its vomit. Because it smells like food. When a dog throws up on the floor and he looks at it and it smells like the food he just ate, he goes back to it. When there is an experience that we have that provides outcomes that look a little bit like what we desire, we keep it. Because we think that's what we actually want. Whatever it is that we want, love or fame or success, we settle for this non-fulfilling counterfeit experience because it has that tiny little piece of what we want. Even though it has a negative outcome, we experience something positive, and in our hearts we think, well, if there's just a little bit of positive, then I guess I want to experience that again. Right? Dogs recognize the pieces of food in and amongst the vomit. It has a tiny bit of value, so we make the mistake of thinking that it is valuable. Second reason is when a dog vomits, usually it's because they've eaten something poisonous or something that they need to get rid of, something toxic in their system. Okay? The same is true of our experiences. They can be poisonous and harmful to our souls, to who we are, to the life that we're trying to build for tomorrow. And yet, we still keep going back to those experiences. Okay? But it doesn't have to be that way. Wisdom learns from experience. Right? Wisdom is the difference between just having the experience and learning from it. Right? We can develop that wisdom. God wants you to have wisdom. That's what's so beautiful about the Bible. It is a collection of writings, very, very old. They were written by people inspired by God over the course of thousands of years. But they all lead us to Jesus. And they all lead us to developing the kind of person for ourselves that God wants us to be. Wisdom is available. You just have to find it. You have to want it. And it's really a choice. You don't have to be wise. Nobody's going to tell you in order to be successful in life, you have to be wise or learn from it, from your mistakes. Nobody's going to tell you that if you don't learn from your experiences that you won't be a good person. Nobody's going to tell you that you won't be accepted by God if you're not wise. But it is important because the future that we build for ourselves depends on learning from the mistakes of the past. And it's your choice. All right, Proverbs 9:12 says, if you become wise, you will be the one to benefit. If you scorn wisdom, you will be the one to suffer. Certainly our choices impact the lives of other people, but when it comes to learning from our mistakes and making changes for the better, we impact no one else more than ourselves. It is a personal choice with personal consequences. But it's not all about you. You are not alone in this journey. Wisdom doesn't only have to learn from experience. When I was in college, I was taking a history class. It was church history, which if you have ever studied, you will know it's real boring. It's real exciting for about the first 300 years after Jesus because stuff happens. And then from about 300 to the Reformation, Martin Luther, all that, it's so boring. Nothing happens for 1,500 years. And then things start to get exciting again. And I'm in the middle of this, and I'm bored, and it doesn't seem applicable, and I don't understand. And I kind of jokingly said to my professor, I said, why do we study this? Why is this even a class? Why do we care? I didn't say that, why do we care? That was part in my head. I was more polite than that because he had my grade in his hands. And he said something very, very profound. He says, this is not true of just church history, but of all history. He says, we study history because life is too short to make all of the mistakes ourselves. Life is too short to make all of the mistakes ourselves. So we study the people who have come before us. We see their mistakes. We learn from their mistakes so that we do not repeat them. And then we have a whole life allotted to us to make our own new mistakes, which others will hopefully read and learn from us. But see, we study history. We don't just learn from our own mistakes. We learn from others. Wisdom learns from others. There are many generations who have gone before, right? And there are many people in our lives who have been in situations just like the ones we're in. And we can learn from them. Wisdom learns from others. Right, Proverbs 9:12. It's another proverb about wisdom. It says, a wise son heeds his father's instruction, but a mocker does not respond to rebukes. Now, two things about this verse. The one, I just want to define that word mocker. Obviously, it means like someone who would mock someone or who would scorn wisdom, as in the last verse. But it's also a word that is used in Proverbs over and over again as the opposite of a wise person. Okay? Proverbs is written as Hebrew poetry, which often involves two lines in which either the same thing is said with different words or something is set up and then the opposite is given. In one of these, this is the opposite, okay? A wise son heeds his father's instruction. What's the opposite of that? A mocker does not respond to rebukes. But also, in this verse, it's not just talking about our parents, right? If you're not a son, then this you might think, well, this has nothing to do with me, right? If you don't have a father to give you instruction, you might think, well, this has nothing to do with me. But it does, because it's not just about fathers and sons. It's about those who have gone before, those who have experienced, and those who are going through that experience. Right? This verse applies to anyone who is taking instruction, who is relying on people who have been there before. If you are willing to listen, then you are wise. If you don't respond when someone tells you, hey, I don't think you're doing this right. If you don't respond when someone tries to encourage you and say, I think this is a mistake. That's on you. So ask yourself, what negative experience do I keep returning to? And what is it about that negative experience that is attractive? Where's the piece of food in the middle of the vomit? Recognize it for what it is, so you know when you see it, this is a trap. This is deceptive. What can I learn from that negative experience? And based on what I'm learning from that experience, what am I going to do differently moving forward? Right? Don't return to the vomit. Don't repeat your folly. Don't be foolish. One of the most important lessons, I think, we learn about wisdom comes from a man in 1 Kings, a guy by the name of Elijah. And if you look at each piece of Elijah's story, you see a lot of really great moments, a lot of amazing experiences. There are miracles, there are great moments where he gets to preach about God. There are also low moments, times when he's afraid for his life. But if you start in the beginning and you go through his story, you find the story of someone who doesn't initially learn from his experiences. You see, Elijah starts out as a prophet, as someone who God has said, I have a message for you. I want you to send this message. And it's a message of judgment. It's a bad message. It's a message for the king saying, you messed up. You are not following me. You're not leading your people. And therefore, bad things. Okay? I'm not going to sit here and tell you all the whole of Elijah's story. But it starts out with people suffering. And Elijah, because he was the messenger, kind of the origin of the phrase, don't shoot the messenger. Everyone thinks, well, here's this prophet. Here's this man of God. He came in and said that it wouldn't rain. And now it's not raining. Therefore, he made it happen. So if we want revenge, we'll take it out on Elijah. So Elijah has to go into hiding. And while he's there alone, you know, he lives on his own with no one accepting him, no one happy with him for quite some time. Until the day comes when God said, it's time to do something about this. It's time to go back. And he has a number of big moments, none bigger than this mountaintop showdown, which, if you're not familiar with the story, is something you really want to take a look at in 1 Kings, because Elijah goes to these prophets, to these priests of this other god, this other false idol, and he says, it's time for me and you to show the people whose God is real. So he challenges them. He says, build an altar, build a fire, build the wood, sacrifice an animal, put it on top, but do not light the fire. All we will do is pray. I'll have my altar, you'll have yours, and we will only pray. And whoever's God sends down fire from heaven to light the altar, that will be the true God. Everyone will know. And so he gives them all day. And they shout and they scream and they pray and they dance and they do all of these things. And he sits there and he mocks them. And he eggs them on. Says, you're not yelling loud enough. You know, maybe your God has fallen asleep. Maybe he's gone to the bathroom. You got to wait for him to come back. He gives them all day until they're exhausted, and of course nothing has happened. And just to rub it in, he has these buckets of water brought and a trench dug around his altar, and the water is poured onto the wood and it fills up the trench just to prove that there's no way anyone could possibly, by human power, light this altar on fire. And then he stands in front of it and he says just a few simple words to the effect of, God, I want these people to know that you are real and that everything I say is true. And fire drops from the sky. And there's an explosion. And the burnt offering, the animal is gone. The wood is burnt up. The stones are gone. The trench is dry. There's nothing left. And he just drops the mic. He's just there. He stands there. This is his victory. This is his God's victory. But it doesn't turn out the way he wants. And again, people are angry with him. Okay? Again, people are rejecting him. And he begins to think that he is the only one in his whole country who still follows God. Because it had gotten that bad. There were only a couple of hundred out of the millions of Israelites who still followed God faithfully. And he begins to think he's the only one. And he flees. And he gets depressed. Even suicidal. He says to God, I've done everything you've asked. This hasn't worked out. Okay, God, we gave it a shot. It's not working. I failed, I guess. Maybe it would be better if you just took me home now. God wasn't done with Elijah yet, not by a long shot. And so God has a moment where he needs to speak to Elijah, needs to remind him of who he is, that he is still God's child. And so he takes him to this place on a mountain again. And he shows them all these wonders. There's a fire and there's an earthquake and there's a rushing wind. And God was not in those things. Those things were the representation of the experiences that Elijah has just left behind. He's led a whirlwind life. But God was not in those moments of chaos. God was in the small, quiet voice saying, I'm still here. You're still my child. I'm not done with you yet. And that moment, not the mountaintop showdown, not the fire from heaven, it was that moment with the still small voice that marked the turnaround in Elijah's life. That was the moment that he learned from his mistake. The mistake of believing that God was only in the flash of light, that God was only in the powerful demonstrations, that God was only in the rushing wind and the fire. It was here that he learns that God is always there and that he's not alone. He went on to have a very successful ministry. In fact, calling and raising up an apprentice who would go on to do even more things, more than Elijah. His life was not over as he thought. It was only getting started. But first he had to learn that God was with him even when he didn't know it. That was his moment. I don't know what your moment is. I don't know what your struggle, what your hang-up is, the thing that you keep going back to. But when we learn from that experience, we will see the world through the lens of wisdom and not foolishness. All of these things, they can cloud our reality. Right, but when we choose wisdom, when we choose to learn and go on and move on and improve from our experiences, everything becomes clearer. By itself, experience is a crappy teacher. But when we add wisdom, when we add those experiences, help us get from here to there, then we begin to make something more of our life. So we're all in this journey. There are places we've been, there are mistakes we've made, we've learned from them, we've moved on, we have something else. in the future. None of us are there yet. None of us are just getting started with nothing to share. Okay? So what I want to leave you with this morning is two things. Always be learning. Always be teaching. Always be learning. Always be teaching. Because there is someone who you can learn from, and there is someone who can learn from you. There are only two people in the world whom that is not true for. If there is someone who has nothing left to learn from anyone else on the planet, and there is someone just born who has nothing to share, and you are not either of those people. Always be learning, always be teaching. The example of Paul in 1 Corinthians, before we go, I am not seeking my own good, but the good of many so that they may be saved. I think that could be a mission statement for the church. Not seeking my own good, but the good of many so they may be saved. Follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. That's a perfect picture of the church as we are following each other. You know, learning from those who have gone before, teaching those who come after. We're building each other up, making each other stronger. Let's pray. Father, this morning as we are here together, would you remind us that we are together, that we are family, that we are here for each other. Don't let us return to the mistakes of the past. Don't let us return to those experiences. No matter how positive they seem, we know because we've been there, and you know because you were there with us, that we need to leave those things behind. Help us to bring those experiences into the light. You know, put people in our lives who can teach us, who can lead us into wisdom. And any opportunities that we have to share the wisdom of the past, would you make us the people who can sow into the lives of those who are learning from us. Thank you for each other and for the knowledge that we are your children and that you are always there. Thank you for everything you've done for us. In Jesus' name, amen.